This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Lombardi Line. I'm Claudia Belfato with VP of Circa Resort and Casino, Mike Baum. And people, it's not just any Saturday. College football kicks off in just 2 hours. We're going to get you ready for all of the action here on Lombardi Line. Of course, we're going to look forward to the NFL, but we have to start with college. In Dublin, Ireland, game day kicking off. Pat McAfee probably not feeling great. I think you said he had 36 Guinnesses, Mike Baum?
Yeah, He might not be still hungover. He might be in full flight for game day today.
Yeah, and you don't really stop at that point. But it's going to be a great game. Of course, the game of week zero, only 4 games on there, but this is the one everybody's talking about. Mike Norvell and Florida State opened 13.5. We saw some Georgia Tech money down to 10 in the hook. Total opened 54, got some over money to 55.5. And the storyline here is that Florida State is out for blood after that snub. DJ Uiagalelei replacing Jordan Travis, of course. That's just one of many changes, though, Mike. They had to replace 14 of 22 starters. So first, were you surprised by the movement on Georgia Tech here? And are you going to take advantage of that and roll with Florida State?
You know, Claudia, I'm a little bit surprised that we saw the dog all the way down to 10.5. And then the resistance really came at 10.5. So for us here at Circa, 11's a disaster. We want Florida State, obviously, to cover all the numbers, but 11's a really bad landing spot. Look, Haynes King... A little bit of the Jameis Winston, right? He give it to you, but he gives it to his opponents. Led the league in touchdowns and in interceptions last year, but certainly exciting. Georgia Tech comes off the bowl win in the Gasparilla Bowl against UCF. They have a winning record, so some excitement there. I go back to, although Florida State overall had to replace a lot, that offensive line is still very experienced. 345 Division I starts returning there. I don't think Uiagalelei has to do a lot because I think they're going to be able to run the football. I lean at 10.5 Florida State, but I haven't made a play on the game.
Yeah, I tend to lean that way just because the market moved in my favor. I think what they were able to do recruiting wise, they filled in the holes good enough. Now, of course, that's just trying to, you know, see past the smoke of the off season. We don't really know until we see this game in action. Georgia Tech's defense struggled last year, so you have to think how much that has improved. The offense did hold their own, though, bringing back 9 starters from that unit. You mentioned Haynes King. It's really a barbell approach with him. What do you expect? Because he led the ACC in touchdowns, but he also led an interception, so he's going to throw the ball. We know that for sure. We just don't know which way it's going to go. So some options there. Of course, you could look at a first half if you don't want to go with the normal spread. Any feel on this total? Do you feel like maybe the defenses will show up a little more? Do we not trust Georgia Tech's defense and we expect Florida State's offense to get going? Any feel on the total here? Like I said, it's all a little bit of over money.
So I tend to lean under in all sports, Claudia. I like to start out a winner and get a sweat from there. I also, you know, think about the games they play in London, the NFL. It often depends on travel, but some sluggish games you see at Wembley Stadium or at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And early in the year, generally, the defenses are ahead of the offenses. So if you said you got to bet a side and you got to bet a total here, I probably would just take the total under 55.5, and that would persuade me off the lane the favorite because it would be too uncorrelated, those two bets. Do you have any concern from a Florida State standpoint of Alex Atkins, the OC who was suspended for recruiting violations? He's got to miss the first 3 games. Their analyst, Gabe Fertitta, will be calling plays, although he's very familiar with the program, not as a play caller. Does that give you any pause in backing the Seminoles?
It does, but I think similar, it's of course not the same situation with Michigan, but I think when you have a team, and that was different because that was later in the season, but when you do have a team that's working together throughout the offseason, they're in and out of those meetings, they're always in the same room. If it's not a player for me, I usually don't let that affect my handicap too much, but I think that probably did have some sort of play in this number coming down. Like I said, open 13 in the hook, down to 10.5. So me personally, I'm not going to put too much stock in that. And I think this team overall, we know how athletes work, right, Mike? They're going to be pretty angry coming out of the gates here. So I think regardless of who's calling plays, I do like Florida State on this side, but that's certainly something to keep in mind. Before we move on to Nevada and SMU, I have to ask, do you just have a take on general on this game's going to places like Ireland? I think it's pretty cool to see the crowds that they're getting, but curious what you think about it.
Well, I when I first saw this game on the schedule, I said, you know, Notre Dame is the obvious connection to go to Ireland, right? What is right. this ACC game in Ireland? It's very strange. But then I found out the Georgia Tech punter is from Ireland. The Shanahan, mm-hmm. the Shanahan kid, David Shanahan. So I guess that's the connection there. I think it's okay for these colleges to try it. I have to tell you personally, I think the NFL is playing too many games abroad. I think it dilutes the quality of play because of the travel. They're going to try Brazil. But, Claudia, they're playing it in the fourth largest soccer stadium in Brazil. Why would you play it in a 47,000-seat stadium? I think they're a little bit afraid about the crowd, right? They don't want to have a 90,000-seat stadium and have 40,000 fans there, and it looked bad. But I think it's getting overextended from an NFL standpoint. I don't mind this game. This is a great trip for the kids. This is a lifetime, you know, experience they'll remember their whole lifetime. And it's the tradition, right? They used to play there at the Meadowlands, the kickoff classic. That would be the first game of the year. And now it's in Dublin.
Mm-hmm. They're shaking everything up. The playoffs shaked up. So it's a new era, I suppose, of college football, which I have to say I do think is exciting. But it didn't really make sense. Like, the Irish aren't playing in Ireland, but it's okay. We still get an exciting first game. We will move on to one of the other four. That's Nevada and SMU. SMU open consensus 20.5, Mike. This got as high as 27.5, then came back down a bit, settled at 24 and the hook. Total open 57, saw some under money there. Nevada coming off of a 2-10 record, SMU 11-3. So this line isn't too surprising. I'm not too surprised it got up to 27 and the hook. Where do you lean here? Do you go to a side? Do you go to a total or maybe a different market because it's a decent spread?
So I laid 24 here. But obviously that number really isn't available. This number touched 27.5 earlier this morning in Las Vegas in some books and back down to 27 where we're at DraftKings and at Circa as well right now. When you look at the metrics of UNR and obviously we live here, I mean, it's really been quite a fall for a team that was ultra competitive in the Mountain West under Chris Ault for many, many, many years to where they've been now, a two-win team. And here's their total, 2 or 2.5. And they're playing 13 games because they're going to Hawaii this year. It's really, really stunning. You know, they're coming off these two horrible seasons. And if you look inside of SMU, they really did it with defense last year. Their strength was their ability to rush the passer. They had 47 sacks. That was the second most in Division I. Think about that. And UNR allowed 41. So it's a bad combination. Preston Stone is very, very efficient. 26 touchdowns against only 6 interceptions. And the key metric in this to me is over the last 2 years, SMU has been very good when laying double digit numbers. They've been great as a big favorite. I wouldn't get involved at 27.5, and I wish I would have caught 23.5. I didn't, but we're hoping they can cover 24.
And it is just week zero, people. So we do have time. You don't have to jump on the lines if they're stale, if you didn't get the right number. But of course, that's what you want to try to do, predict the market, get ahead of it. But you mentioned it. I think Stone's a huge piece here. His efficiency, he was top 15 in efficiency rating. You talked about that touchdown to interception ratio. So I have to agree with the market here, but I'm not going to chase the number if I lost out on it. A few minutes till we go to the break, but I do want to talk about Montana State and New Mexico. Montana State open consensus 9.5, so much shorter line here. Got to 14-13 in the hook. Weird to see an FBS team, though, such a big underdog against an FCS, but you have one of the worst and the best against one of the best and the worst, if that makes sense. So how do you attack a game like this?
I can't attack it because I can't get over that Bronco Mendenhall is going to be catching 2 touchdowns from an FCS school. That's hard to believe. I thought, by the way, it's a great hire. I mean, he comes into a really bare cupboard. Give him a few years. But, you know, all the coaching changes in the Mountain West this year, and we had their media days right here at Circa. I thought this might have been the best hire of the entire group. Montana State, this kid Mallett, who's now a senior, you know, when he was a freshman, He went from fourth string to start the year. He started the national championship game, and then he's had injury problems and shared time, but he's still top 10 in rushing touchdowns at Montana right. State at rushing and rushing and in top 10 in passing yards. It's pretty remarkable. They haven't beat a Division I school since 2006 when they beat Colorado 19-10. I wonder if the heat in Albuquerque might be a factor. You know, I'm looking in Montana. They're practicing even midday in the high 60s, lower 70s right now. Game time kickoff looks to be 92 in Albuquerque. So maybe that's a factor. I passed. I'll just enjoy the game.
Yeah, I can't not play Montana State. I think just what they were able to do. Well, I should put it this way. What they were able to do if they came back with that same core, then I'd probably be all over them. But they relied so heavily on that run game because they had a top O line. But both of their guards transferred to FBS schools. A few of their defensive guys left as well. New offensive and defensive coordinators. So that makes me want to sort of step away. It's funny what you say about Bronco Mendenhall, but he hasn't coached since Virginia in 2021. Does that not worry you at all?
No, it doesn't, because I don't think they lose the game. I don't think the college game has changed so much. I think it's a lot about message and recruiting and establishing a culture, which give him time to do. I think he's a very, very well-respected coach, and sometimes a couple years off can give you a little perspective.
Okay, fair enough. Before we head out of here, just quickly, Hawaii, Delaware State. Hawaii opened 38.5 up to 40. I just stay away from massive spreads like this. What do you do with it?
I think the best part of this game was Chris Felica's tweet about why were they taking a bus to JFK? There's no direct flights to Honolulu from Philadelphia or DC. What?
I just have to say, who is putting these schedules together that you miss the bus going to the plane, as if that matters, though, when the spread is 40. Stick around, guys. We're heading into NFL preseason action next here on Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Lombardi Line, back with VP of Circa Resort and Casino, Mike Palm. I'm Claudia Bellafato. We're going to dive into the 1 p.m. Eastern window of the NFL preseason action. Of course, last game for teams to get an extended look at roster depth, who makes the 53-man roster. Maybe coaches want to throw in their starters for a little something before the regular season happens. But I don't think we'll see much of that. Mike, you and I talked off camera about preseason, and your answer to me was, I don't really want to bet any of the games. So break down sort of how you approach the preseason market and maybe why it's not really worth betting the third preseason game and last of the preseason.
Personally, I don't put any dollars into it, Claudia, but because I don't have the time to invest and really watch it. You know, there was a time when Chuck Edel used to come on Follow the Money with Mitch and Paul, and I mean, that's what he specialized in, the preseason. So if you wanted to follow somebody that invests their time in it, I get that. The only thing I'm really looking at is injury news. Try to really hear more from beat reporters about these joint practices that lead into these games. I think you glean a lot more information because you're seeing first team against first team more in those practices than you are when the cameras turn on in front of these games. Steelers at Lions today. I think the Steelers is somewhat significant in the fact that neither Russell Wilson nor Justin Fields has looked good at all. So I think that would be one thing you could glean out of this preseason that could be significant moving forward if you're looking at AFC North or Steeler win totals, or even handicapping the Steelers in the first fourth of the season. I mean, I guess there was a good betting market maybe for a little bit about who would take the first snap, which is, by the way, a wildly fascinating and growing market that I had never got involved in before this year. But I thought there were some really interesting opportunities, and there's where you can actually use some insider information. You know, the only one that was really a favorite that came crashing down and didn't get, you know, the number didn't get away from everybody was Knicks for a while. But, you know, Michael Lombardi, who's very tuned in to Sean Payton, what's going on in Denver, steadfastly said all along, don't pay any attention to the depth chart. Knicks is going to be your starter. So looks like we'll make a little bit of money there. And the other one was Darnold in Minnesota, who at one point, you know, Darnold was only at minus $1.20 and McCarthy even money to be the starter there. I mean, McCarthy was never going to start before week 5. And then he gets hurt, of course. But That was always going to be, I thought, a lock and a lot of value in that market. Now, eventually it got away and it was $8 and then they took him off the board. For a long part of the summer, Darnold was less than minus $2 in Minnesota.
And this is what I talked about, trying to get ahead of the market. But in a lot of cases, you can't if you don't have that insight. But that's why you tune in to shows like VSiN and Lombardi Line, so you can get that inside info. And I think you make a really good point, Mike, about betting these preseason games, because everybody has had so many months off away from football, so everybody's jumping at the opportunity. But a lot of the times we're betting on something that we don't know. The coaches will say, okay, the starters are going. And then we see these lines get hit like crazy and the starters are out there for 2-3 snaps. And it doesn't essentially really matter when it comes to the line. And so when we're seeing this number, like the Steelers opened 3, move all the way to 7, Tomlin's out here saying, you know, the quarterback's an incomplete study. We don't know. Like you said, it doesn't even really matter because Wilson and Fields are out there looking like rookies. So it doesn't really matter if they are playing. But instead of betting the preseason games, you look to the futures markets or maybe even try to get ahead of some of the lines that are already out week to week. If Russell Wilson doesn't look good in the preseason games, he might not look good in the regular season games as well. And just curious, when it comes to that quarterback competition, who do you think will have the majority of the games this season? Instead of saying who starts, who do you think will be the QB1 for the majority?
That's a tougher question than who's going to start, because how can you not start Russell Wilson? If you're going to put him on the bench, release him, right? He can't operate from his mentality as a backup. Mm-hmm. So you've got to start him. How long does it go? It's interesting because their schedule is so loaded to the back half. Even if you love the Steelers, what about that 8-game stretch where they play all their division games, plus they play against 2 other division winners from that? I mean, it's totally ludicrous, mm-hmm. that stretch for them. It's impossible. But so maybe it's a little more manageable early on, right? Falcons, these games are going to be field goal lines. And then you get Chargers at home. It's interesting. So Wilson has a shot. The schedule isn't brutal early. You also have to factor that in, is how much confidence does Tomlin have in Fields? I'm going to say that Wilson starts at least the first 8 weeks, which I'll make the bet Russell Wilson, because if they pulled him after the bye week and you went with Fields, you'd still have to say they're going to go Fields all the way. He's not going to get injured. He'd have to play the remaining 9 games to have more. So I'd make Russell Wilson a slight favorite there.
I mean, it's just not the storyline too, but it's what coaches and coaching staffs tend to do. If you bring a veteran on, it's usually you're bringing on a veteran to sort of lead the way. And then if they show you what they've shown you the past 3 years, the reason that they're not a starting quarterback in the NFL, then you bench them. That's not as bad as bringing in Justin Fields from the very beginning. And I tend to think, if you bring Russell Wilson in for a little over $1 million, like you're paying a kicker, but you're paying a quarterback, then yeah, you should probably start him and then bench him if he doesn't show up. One game I do want to touch on before we head into something exciting that Circa is doing, I want to talk about this Panthers-Bills game, because that did flip, open Buffalo 4.5. Now Panthers, that same exact line on the other side, they're laying the 4.5. Dave Canales said he plans on getting the starters out. That's why we saw this line flip. Sean McDermott said he's holding back his key players. Is there anything you're looking for in the Bills to try and get excited when it comes to their depth? Are you looking more into the Panthers, because we need to see a lot more out of them this season, or is this a game you're just ignoring?
Well, I'll tell you this, from a short sample size perspective, going against the moves has been profitable in the preseason. Again, the 49ers Raiders game, what did that game move? 11 points last night and they ended up tied. I mean, you could got 9 points with the Raiders. That's just kind of ludicrous in preseason. Right. I don't know what I'm going to see from the Bills. I have concerns about their defense. I think their defense is small, and I don't think it's fast enough. And I think the window is closing on them in the East if it's not already closed. Who's the alternative, though? Can Rodgers stay healthy? I can't put my finger on it, but something's amiss in Miami. Like, the piling on Flores by Tua was unbelievable to me and kind of despicable. They're all celebrating Vic Fangio leaving. Like, anybody that wants to have some order in the room down there is run out. So I wonder about the culture. And then, also, if you want, I don't mind people betting Miami regular season over, but how do you bet them to win the Super Bowl? Either they've got to be the one seed, right? Or Jacksonville's got to be the one seed. They cannot go to weather. He cannot play in weather. So, or Houston, and you go and play in a dome. It's just confounding to me. On the other side, you know, I hear people I respect that are professional bettors that are high on the Panthers this year, and you saw the market move up in their win totals. They were the worst team by record last year, although you could argue at points New England looked worse than them. People are very high on Dave Canales. I haven't gotten there. I mean, I've heard people even say to flirt with to make playoffs at 6-1 or plus 550 on the Panthers. I mean, that division's wide open, but I don't know if I can get there. And Bryce Young still seems, he just seems small to the eye. He, looking at the game, he seems very, 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 very small. So those are my thoughts on those two teams, Claudia.
Yeah, Panthers, I want to stay away from. Sad to hear your take on Miami. I do understand it, but I guess I've been all in on them. But maybe that's just because I focus on the AFC East a little bit too much as a Patriots fan. I'm trying to have something to look forward to because it's not going to be the Patriots. I've been so high on the Bills, but I think they really put Josh Allen in a tough spot, which lends me to think if they do anything this season, Mike, Josh Allen has to win MVP because I don't know who he's going to be throwing to, who's coming out of the backfield, who he has on defense. So that's how I feel about the AFC. I just feel like Miami's in the best spot. Quickly, Ravens Packers, you mentioned something really interesting, which is trends don't really stick out that much, or maybe you can't get as much of an edge as you have in the past because everybody talks about the totals being low. And so the totals adjust. Something similar we saw with the Ravens was the fact that they just crushed the preseason. Harbaugh still 40-15 straight up, 40-20 ATS as a head coach in the preseason. But in this situation, we're seeing backups expected for the majority of the game on both sides for the Ravens and Packers. So at that point, you just take trends and put them aside. Am I right? Because a lot of people look a little bit too much into trends.
Yeah, I mean, like the Packers, when they go out and they're going to play Denver, and we got buried in that game, right? Denver's got something to prove. They want to get Nick snaps and all that. And the Packers are just trying to get through to be healthy for their opener. I do say, and it's not just because he hasn't played in the preseason, but if you're a Ravens supporter or if you backed them with your betting dollars, you have to be concerned about Lamar's health. I mean, he's had COVID twice, but I know he's read about it now. He studied, so he found out what it was. But he was sick earlier. They don't know what it is. They test him for Lyme disease. It's like this mysterious thing with Lamar. I mean, he's an MVP, obviously, but you have to wonder about what's wrong with him. From the standpoint of they really can't identify it or put their finger on it to fix it.
Yeah, you can't get a scan on that. So we'll keep an eye on it. Hopefully he is okay because Ravens will be a fun squad to watch with Derrick Henry out of the backfield. We will continue with more NFL and MLB talk later. But don't forget episode one of Circa Survivor. The quest for $9.2 million makes a debut on Monday night. VSiN, five-part docuseries, takes you inside the high-stakes world of the annual Circa Survivor. Watch Circa Survivor, the quest for $99.2 million on Monday, 9 p.m. Eastern.
This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're back here on Lombardi Line, VP of Circa Resort and Casino, Mike Palm. I'm Claudia Bellafato. It's time to talk some baseball, people, because it is the final push, the final stretch for teams trying to get into the playoffs, but also, Mike, for players trying to win some hardware. And Paul Skeens is the one name we heard a lot coming into this season, that number one overall pick for the Pirates. And I don't really think he skipped a beat coming out red hot. And we did see his number get as steep as minus 5,000. That was all the way back. All the way back on August 6th. So not too long ago. Yet now if we're looking at a market, DraftKings, for example, he's minus 130. Jackson Merrill not far behind, around even money. How do you approach a market like this? And how do you approach a move like that? Because that is massive. And why do we see it go that way for Paul Skeens?
Well, it's nothing Skeens did. What did he do? I mean, he's been terrific, 8-2. He'd lead Major League Baseball in ERA, but he doesn't have enough innings. You have to have pitched an inning for every game your team has played. He's got 104 innings. The Pirates have played 128 games. He's not going to get there. He would need to get to 162 innings. I don't know how he can get 58. Even if he started seven times, he can get to 58 innings. That would be almost impossible for him to qualify for ERA. 130 strikeouts, the whip of less than one. I think he's gotten better all year. Maybe he had one rough start. He gave up four runs at Chavez Ravine to the Dodgers. But it's more been about what Jackson Merrill's done, how this kid has come on with power, the RBIs. And really, that coincided with the Padres' push from being a sub-500 team to, you know, now contending for the AL West and being, you know, the darling pick of a lot of people to win the World Series right now. Jackson Merrill's has the eighth best batting average in Major League Baseball, and it's not a short sample size. He's got 444 at-bats. He's at almost 20 home runs. He's at 18. He's driven in 71. He's probably going to drive in 100 runs this year. He's top 30 OPS. He's been terrific. The value here was, if you had to bet Skeens, he actually became the dog to Merrill right before that start against the Reds. If you would have bet Skeens, you could have got him at even money. Now, in most markets, he's back up to 125, 130. That was the one spot to get him. I don't think it's decided, but I think if the vote was today, Skeens would win it. Heck, he was, you know, he was top five in the overall Cy Young voting for part of the summer.
Exactly. And we'll talk about Cy Young in a second, but I think a lot of people maybe who aren't watching baseball day to day and not watching this market might look at Paul Skeens' stats, Mike, and say, he's a 216 ERA. And if you look at the advance, expected ERA in the top 4%, velo top 10%, elite command control, all of these things are true, people. But Mike was spot on. The innings matter. Against Jackson Merrill, who's an outfielder, he's in that lineup every single day. You talked about the numbers, which is all true. He's stealing bags left and right. Top 20 in WAR, that's tied with Corey Seager and Bryce Harper. So we're not just talking rookies at this point. We're talking the best of the best in Major League Baseball. And again, he's in that lineup every day. The Padres holding on to that second wild card spot. So that has a huge impact on this market. Now, let me ask you this. Do you go any further than that? Are you on Jackson Merrill, Jackson Churio? Do we even touch him over there with the Brewers or late start for him? So only as of late has he been hot.
No, I think it's absolutely a binary decision here between Skeens and Merrill. And I would advise people if they were looking further down, find a better use for their money, because you're no shot. There's zero shot for anybody else in this market.
Yeah, we often say numbers tell a story, and I think that is truth for there. It's also pretty true for the AL Cy Young, Tarik Skubal, minus 1,600, Corbin Burns. You're getting decent odds on. At first, everybody thought he would be the overwhelming favorite because of how he was playing, and he was playing great. Mike had an ERA in the neighborhood of 2 for the first 3 months with the team, but roughed up in August, an 8.71 ERA, 20 earned in just 4 starts. This is a market, though, you just can't touch at this point. Or do you try and buy a dip with Corbin Burns?
No, it's over. And I think, and Skubal's going to start today against the White Sox for the Tigers. That game goes 7:10 your time, 4:10 out here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's a huge, huge favorite. He'll probably go off at $3. The Tigers could shut down Skubal right now and not pitch another inning. He's winning this award. I took a shot in this market I think it was the last week of May. I took a shot with Seth Lugo. That ticket's done, right? But I really thought Skubal would get traded to the National League. And then I thought it would be a two pitcher race between Burns and Lugo. Meanwhile, Clase has a bigger, I mean, Clase shouldn't be 25-1. What he's done at the back end of that Guardian bullpen, I mean, you got to get ahead of the Guardians by the sixth or it's over, because they go 7, 8, 9. I would like to say this about Lugo as well. The Twins ought to put him on the 10-day IL. They need to refreshen his arm. His arm, the ball has no life to it. I know he beat the Angels, but the start before that, he couldn't get out of the fourth inning in Minnesota. They do need to freshen his arm for the playoff run and for perhaps the playoffs. But this is over. It's done. If Skubal doesn't throw another pitch, he's your Cy Young winner.
Yeah, and like you said, today up against the Sox, minus 260, probably going north of that. And even if they do start limit him, which they're saying really nothing to play for, I don't think it matters. That one's pretty much wrapped up. NL Cy Young, Chris Sale, minus 340. Red Sox fans bawling their eyes out because why couldn't we have that? One of the best seasons of his career by far for the Braves. Zach Wheeler next at plus 250 for the Phillies, getting hot at the right time, which does matter. A 173 ERA and 4 starts this month. And then Paul Skeens, who you mentioned, was in this race at one point, but no longer. Because if he's minus 110 for Rookie of the Year, I don't think he's going to win Cy Young.
Yeah, it's Sales. And You know, all year in this market, I said the whole bet is, is Sale going to stay healthy, which I thought was a dog. But he stayed healthy. He's been, Claudia, you watched him pitch there in Boston for all those years. This year might be his most consistent. He had one bad start against the Pirates. He went up to Miller Park. The first three guys, it went double against the Brewers, and that was it. He only gave up two runs. I mean, he's so good. Mm-hmm. You know, last night they got him off the hook. He gave up two runs in six and a third or six and two thirds, and the Braves come back and win the game. So it saves them a loss, if that means anything. But he's terrific again. He's given you seven innings and two runs or less almost every start. He certainly has earned it. There was value in him all along. You could have got him still late May at 10-1, 6-1 in June. Remember, this was Glasnow Wheeler as like co-favorites for the longest time. Now, Glasnow's hurt. Who didn't know that? He gets hurt every year. Wheeler's going to be the guy who finishes in the top five every year in the Cy Young, you know, right? He's always the bridesmaid and right around there and consistent. But yeah, this is Chris Sale's award now.
It is Chris Sale. You said it. I can back that 100%. His best, most consistent season. I was just sitting here waiting for him to get hurt. I'm like, we got rid of him for a reason, right? And he just goes to Atlanta and he's absolutely ripping it, which is hard for me to see as a Red Sox fan. But I'm happy for him and I'm happy for Atlanta. I know you're a baseball guy. I'm a baseball gal. I'm curious if you have a feel on this futures market and who you really think is going to win the whole thing. The Dodgers are always the darling. Everybody wants to bet on them. At +350, Yankees next at 5-1, Phillies +550, Orioles +850. The Orioles were such a fun team to watch last season. Of course, Corbin Burns, if he can clean up his act, I like that a little bit better for them. But any feel on this futures market when it comes to the World Series?
Well, I sit here today with the Dodgers having the best record in baseball saying I don't think they win a playoff series. I think you have to attack this market from an anti-Dodgers perspective. Well, look, Flaherty's been great, and it was the best pickup at the trade deadline. But what's beyond that? Kershaw goes tonight. They're hoping to get Kershaw back up to seven innings. I mean, at his height, when he was winning three Cy Youngs, Kershaw was awful in the playoffs. He always was. What's after that? Gavin Stone? I mean, what's their rotation for the playoffs? I don't get it. Glasnow's hurt again. I just don't get it. And the bullpen is not elite either. So I think from a National League perspective, I like both the other two NL West teams. I think the Padres and Diamondbacks are both live. People don't talk about the Brewers. I think the Brewers are going to be a tough out in the playoffs. They probably play the most fundamentally sound baseball. Pat Murphy's done a great job with them. There's a reason Council wanted to take him to the Cubs, and he sort of backed into that job. But he's done a great job, and they've done it without their number two pitcher, their number three pitcher. Now Yelich is hurt. They just keep winning. So I would throw the Phillies in the mix. I'd say one of those four teams would win the National League. I don't know if that narrows it down enough for you to make any money. And the American League, I think, is wide open. I actually, as much as I hate to say this, they've made seven straight ALCS. The Astros are looking really good right now. Framber's pitching great. He's been the best pitcher the last 6 weeks in baseball. He goes today. That's one of my plays. Verlander's back. Rosin Blanco is like every third start, has no-hit stuff. Hunter Brown's been better. I think the Astros, 10-1 maybe is too short right now. But, you know, I bet him earlier in the year. I bet him back in May +180 not to make the playoffs. That ticket went up in flames.
Hey, man, water finds its level. If you want to tell me I can get a good price on the Astros, Padres, and Phillies, I'm going to look at that roster at the beginning of the season and say, yeah, I'll take that. So if they're healthy, I think that's a good play. All right, we wrap this MLB segment up talking about college football because we have our 2024 VSiN College Football Betting Guide available now, the guide to your ultimate resource for the upcoming season. All 134 teams, a preseason top 25, power ratings, proven betting systems, and more. Sign up now. Receive both the college football and NFL betting guide, plus VSiN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bid discount price of just $175. Don't miss out on the preseason deals. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back here on the Lombardi Line, Mike Palm, Claudia Bellafata. We just broke down So Major League Baseball, we'll break down today's slate a little bit later on. Of course, get back into week zero college football in Dublin, Ireland in hour two. But first, I want to go back to NFL preseason. We talked about, Mike, you don't love betting the games, but you think it's helpful when it comes to futures, trying to get ahead of the market. Let's talk about quarterbacks specifically. A lot of these coaches come out and feel the need that they don't have to play their starters, and some might think that's the smart thing to do. Others might disagree with that. Since 2018, week one quarterbacks who did not appear in the preseason are 17 and 16. So that's a stat that everybody's throwing around. Does it matter? No, not really. But that being said, the NFL quarterbacks with zero preseason playing time through week three, you have Lamar Jackson. You just talked about maybe whose health is in question. Deshaun Watson with the Browns. You have the Chargers, Jets. Aaron Rodgers isn't out there. I don't think anybody wants to force him to play if he doesn't have to, with his health in question as well. The Falcons with Kirk Cousins. Lots of names out there. A few that stuck out, you and I talked off camera, is Deshaun Watson with the Browns, Rodgers with the Jets, and Kyler Murray with the Cardinals. Let's start with the Browns and Deshaun Watson. That's such an interesting scenario, how much money they've paid him, how much trust, I guess, for lack of a better term, that they put into him, bringing him onto the season. What do you expect? What sort of ceiling do you see with the Browns? We know the defense is there, but what can Watson do with this offense?
Well, I think Kevin Stefanski, if he had full control of this team, Watson would not be playing. From people that have watched their practices and watched their joint practices with other teams, you know, half the time he looks like he doesn't belong in the league. I'm talking about Deshaun Watson. Since he's come back from suspension, Claudia's had one good half of football, essentially. Mm-hmm. One good half of football. Now, Jameis is next up there. Is there more confidence? I think if Stefanski had his druthers, they've kept Joe Flacco. But they didn't. So that's where they're at. The defense is an exceptional defense at home. No one has been able to explain to me the difference in their road-home splits. It was absolutely stunning last year. I rarely play an over. I played an over in that wild card game at Houston, and the game was like over in the mid-second quarter. They were just horrific defensively on the road. This was my team last year. This was the team I bet over the wins and to make the playoffs. So I can't complain about that, but I can't get sold on them because of those two things, Watson and the road home split. So I laid off them this year. I ended up landing on Cincinnati to win the North.
And I believe they have one of the toughest strengths of schedules. Their win total set at 8.5, a little bit of juice to the over. Are you maybe going under on that then? If you can get some plus money on the Browns, win total under, if Watson is their guy at quarterback, if they don't change their mind.
Yeah, the division is great. You can pick at each team and you can find strengths with each team. It was the first time in 85 years that a division had four teams with a winning record. As I say, Cincinnati had it, even with the Burrow injury, had a winning record, but they're playing a fourth place schedule, right? So that all makes a difference. Cleveland gets to play a second place schedule, as you point out. I think if there's only one game I could watch in week one, and I mean on the Sunday, because I really like the Thursday and Friday games as much as I complain about them going to Brazil, it might be this one. It might be Cowboys at Cleveland. One team so good at home, one team so bad on the road.
I was just going to say that.
Tom Brady's debut. I mean, that's the game of the day, right?
I was going to say, as you talked about the splits for the Browns, that was Dallas, because I would go gung-ho on them at home, what they were doing. They looked like a completely different team, and then it just flipped the other way on the road. And it's funny because you said exactly what I was thinking. Tom Brady's debut, by the way, how do we think that's going to go? Because I've been hearing him, you know, just on radio shows and podcasts, and he's feeling a little whiny to me, and I'm a Tom Brady girl through and through. Of course, if you can't tell when you see the Patriots things behind me. But I'm very curious how this analyst Tom Brady is going to go. He's complaining a lot about the rookies and how quarterbacks are playing nowadays. What is your take on this Tom Brady on the mic era?
I don't know, because like he seems a little stiff as a personality, but the roast was funny. I think they did a good job with the roast. And by the way, that same crew wants to do a roast of a former MLB player here. We're trying to work it out for maybe next May or next
awesome.
June. It would be really fun at Stadium Swim. But I mean, I have high hopes. I hope he's good. Nobody wants him to fail. And I think You know, they could use a little mixing up in their lineups as well. So I think he'll be good from a knowledge perspective, but you make a point about you can't be, you know, when you're the greatest of all time, it's tough to come on and not be critical of other people or someone who set very high standards for yourself and your team. It may come off as negative if you sort of impose them on everybody in the league.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really had this to an effect of a Tom Brady taking over so soon after playing. So it'll be very interesting. But I think that's the game that I'm going to really be looking forward to as well, like you said, between Dallas and the Browns. And they do have the third toughest strength of schedule. So possibly an underplay if you want to go for that plus money. Another number that sticks out is the New York Jets win total, which is set at 10.5, a little bit of plus money to the over. So market leaning the underway. But again, a situation where you know the talent is there on defense, specifically the weapons are there, but now you have a quarterback who everybody's talking about as if he's going to be his prime MVP, Aaron Rodgers, and I don't think we should be expecting him to be that, Mike, but I'm curious what you think.
Well, so I have my panel today, my preview panel, and Frank Schwab from Yahoo Sports, who's their lead NFL writers on, and I already know he bet the Jets to win the Super Bowl, and I think if you took Rodgers last year in Green Bay, which certainly wasn't his best, and you put it in this team this year, they're definitely a playoff team. They've won 7 games the last 2 years with, you could argue, the worst quarterback play in the league. The very worst, and still won 7 games. They're good at all 3 levels of defense, and I think they've addressed the offensive line issues. How healthy is Rodgers going to be? What can he produce, and can he stay healthy? You know, as times change and medicine advances, you come back from these injuries quicker. You know, if you held a gun to my head and said, who's going to win the East? Maybe I leaned the Jets a little bit. I couldn't come up with it. I wanted to fade Buffalo, and I kept leaning Miami Jets, and I find flaws in both of them, and so I just left the whole division alone. But I think if you get the last year in Green Bay out of Aaron Rodgers, this team does win 10 or 11 games.
Yeah, you make a good point. They didn't necessarily need perfect quarterback play because they had everything else working for them outside of that. So if you do put Aaron Rodgers, even if he is not MVP Aaron Rodgers at the quarterback position under center, then yeah, you're probably going to be okay. It's just me being a Patriots fan, bitter about the whole situation in the AFC East, I do believe. But I tend to agree with you. They probably will get to 10, 11 wins. I think the number's probably right. I'm going to stay away from it. But just looking forward to seeing that Jets team. I think in general, knock on wood, Aaron Rodgers stays healthy. Let's talk about the Cardinals, another quarterback situation that is interesting because every time somebody brings up Kyler Murray, it's almost like just old news at this point. I feel like I haven't really watched Kyler Murray or been excited to watch Kyler Murray in a long time. And so I'm very curious what you think of this team. Their win total only set at 6.5, juiced decently to the over. I don't even know if I see 7 wins. I mean, of course, he has a great new weapon in Marvin Harrison Jr., but is that going to be enough? From what you saw of this team last year, do you think a full season with Kyler Murray healthy will matter much?
I think their offense is going to be terrific. In the whatever games, what did he play, 7 or 8 games at the end of last year? They were a top 10 offense. What's his strength? It's the deep ball. He's top 3 in the long ball accuracy in the league over the last 3 years. And you add Marvin Harrison Jr. there. I think the tight end is terrific. The offense will be very good. It's the defenses that is the worry. Because the defense was not good at all. You know, one of the most underrated games of the year last year, and if you go back and watch this, it's a terrific game, was when the Cardinals played at the Texans late in the year. It was a terrific show between those two offenses that went back and forth in the fourth quarter. One of the most entertaining games that flew under the radar. The tough division too, right? You've got San Francisco, your two-time defending NFC champs. Everybody's high on Seattle with McDonald coming there, a new fresh voice. And then, you know, McVay, everybody loves McVay. I think the Rams lose a lot on defense with Donald retiring. But I do think the Cardinals are sort of flying under the radar because nobody's talking about them because of that division. But you get a healthy Kyler preseason all the way up to healthy going into the season for the first time in a while. So it's a make or break year for him.
I was just going to say, maybe you can take advantage of a team like the Cardinals because nobody's talking about them. Mike Palm, all of the NFL shows I do, you're the first person who actually brought up and spoke highly of the Arizona Cardinals. That is good to hear. We got hour two coming up. We'll talk more NFL. Of course, we're going to talk Florida State, Georgia Tech in Dublin, Ireland. I know Mike Palm has some of his bets bet, including soccer, I believe I saw, and some Major League Baseball. So we'll make sure to get into all of that. Make sure to stay tuned here to Lombardi Line. We'll be right back.